When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
There is no one know the hardship great those island people stand. They're miles away out in the sea, separated from mainland. And day and night they have to fight the angry billows roar. As 10 to 1, if a storm comes on, they will sink and rise no more.
It's a lonesome place now. It's very lonely now, isn't it? When you get down to five or six families, you like company. Nice thing to ride out at night. When you go on the mainland, after eating your supper at night, when you get dark, it's a nice thing to walk out on the main road and walk down to a pub and have a drink and a game of cards and enjoy yourself and go to a dance. But I wouldn't go to a dance. Yeah. Never would ask to go to a dance. Out of Fernand Island, I wouldn't go. Mm-hmm.
Well, the school is the biggest problem in it, do you know? And going in, the teacher, especially this time of year, it's very hard on him to get down in a boat on his own, do you know, to go row out to the beach to take her in. And then the other family leave her out on Friday, Matt and Hennen. But it's very hard on the teacher and on the scholars as well.
That was a fine place to live, you know, and to work and all that, but it was very inconvenient for getting out to the mainland and getting to Mass or to the shops or anything like that, you know. And it was a place you could never keep a big boat to be useful in the line of moving anything heavy or anything, because there wasn't proper facilities for the line of a pier or anything like that in it. In either of the two islands, they wanted a pier for to bring a big boat into. And therefore, they are only placed for curraghs or any kind of rowing boats, you know, up to 2 or 3 ton, that's all.
Many islands off the west coast of Ireland have ceased to be inhabited during the past 40 or 50 years. The reasons for their evacuation are many and varied. But if a date and an immediate cause have to be assigned to the beginning of the exodus, one could settle for 1927, and the drowning of 10 fishermen from Inishgay off the coast of Mayo in that year. 7 years later, as Micheál MacHenry told us in a recording made 10 years ago, the inhabitants of Inishgay, north and south, were transferred to the mainland.
The Gushach is in 1934, the Kulpebeg Tali Dofa, Susli Kerahakra, and then a Rechtas nach Tjreki Tjed an Iskirocht, Achta an Iskirocht Tjreki Akwinishagas Fir Oga.
Well, in Erlein Ella Amoyen Shin Regfer.
The deserted islands of Inishglora and Inishgay are featured in T.H. White's book The Godstone and the Blackamoor, describing in part the quest for the Nawog or image to which the islanders once attributed magic powers, and which they dressed up in a new suit of red flannel each year. Many of these islands were rich in lore and in archaeological remains. Inishmurry, off the coast of Sligo, is famous for its ecclesiastical ruins, its stations or pilgrimage, and its cursing stones. In 1936, there were about 100 adults on the island and 20 children, but according to Thomas H. Mason in his book The Islands of Ireland, no harbours, no roads, no clergy, no police, no magistrate, no doctor, no shop, no rates, no rats, no public house. It could be a description of some of the islands still inhabited. Inishmurry was evacuated exactly 30 years ago in 1948, and some of its former inhabitants may now be found around Moneygold and Grange on the Sligo mainland.
Well, I was born and raised in Inishmurry, and all I know about Inishmurry, we had our own school there, we had our own chapel there in Inishmurry, and the priest used to go to Inishmurry twice a year for the Mass and the Holy Communion.
Well, people still go out to the island, don't they?
Oh, they do. Oh, they all go from Mullaghmore in the summertime. Oh, there's plenty of people and some visitors.
And the houses are still there?
The houses are still there, but you said they're not as good as they used to be. Mm-hmm. When the fire goes away and people leave the houses, there's no more heat fab, the doors is locked and the shutters is under one, and that's that.
Mrs. Mary Donlan is one of the few people who can actually claim to have been born on Inishmurry. As was the case on many other islands, an expectant mother who could arrange to go to the mainland before the birth of a child usually did so. One of the best known of Inishmurry people, for example, Dr. Patrick Herity of Sligo, was not born on the island.
I was reared on Inishmurry. I wasn't actually born there. Very few people were born there because the expectant mothers took precautions that such didn't happen. But I leave it there.
Why was that?
Well, facilities for childbirth, of course, would be the reason of it. Attendance at childbirth. And they usually went not to a hospital, as very few people went to hospitals then. They went to the house of some friend on the mainland and had the babies there and came back to the island after some time. But only those that were born before the way I expected were actually born on the island.
Lack of medical facilities would be one of many considerations in persuading people to abandon island life. Padraig O'Crowshie, headmaster of Afford School on Aran Mór, mentions some other factors as he looks out at the many islands now deserted around that part of Donegal.
The farthest south would be Inisalla, and Innisfree is almost uninhabited now. Then you had Inniscarra, and you had Rutland, Eoch and Sheachtar, Inishcoo and Dithrinish, and also Owey Island. Even in this parish of the Rosses, and there were others in Guidoor as well, Gol and Ishman and Ishetter, and they have been all abandoned. Inishgera was abandoned in 1955. Owey, the last people left Owey Island about 1975. The people left Inishfree about 10 years ago, and the people left Inisalla about 1931. Inisalla was the first island here, as far as I know, that was abandoned or vacated.
And they all followed gradually after that, did they?
Well, there seemed to be a gradual abandonment since from the islands. They left the islands and went to live on the mainland. And that trend has been accelerated by the fact that the Burton Port fishing has been developed during the last 20 years. The people who lived on the islands, the young men especially, got jobs as fishermen on the trawlers, and when the young men left the islands, like Inishfree and Owey Island, well, the old people had to follow them and come to the mainland.
There was a sort of pattern then?
Well, this general pattern all over the country that wherever the young person goes, the old person must follow, because they're not able to man the boats on their own, and they wouldn't be able to supply themselves with the necessaries of life from the shops on the mainland.
Most of the now deserted islands were, of course, Irish-speaking, and in some, like Inishmurry, the language survived long after it had disappeared on the mainland opposite. Thomas H. Mason's statement in 1936 that the inhabitants of Inishmurry do not speak Irish may mean nothing more than that he didn't speak Irish to them. Most of those I met, even though it was many years later, had some Irish, and that impression was confirmed by Joe Nealon, who married an island woman and is himself among the last of the native Irish speakers of Sligo.
The people that left it,
yeah,
spoke Irish up to about 20 years ago.
20 years ago.
Sir Dominic Hurst, the man you were talking to, his everyday language was Irish. His mother and his grandmother, and my father-in-law and mother-in-law and Mihaly, he was a Shanachai. They spoke Irish up in the day they came to Sligo. And after they came up here, some of them died here with me. Mm. And they never spoke English. It was all Irish.
Life on the islands was different, if only because of their isolation. The Irish language survived longer on them. Old customs and beliefs survived, often a whole way of life that had barely changed since the last century. The great example of the dispersal of a closely intervolved island community was, of course, when the people of the Blaskets moved to the mainland around Dunquin in County Kerry in 1953. Because of its crop of famous writers, no island has had its social or cultural life better documented than an Blascaid Mór. Peg Sayers recorded much of it for Radio Éireann.
Just kind of lum with a horse, a good in clown or douche, Gora Clachter, Agostine, Monte Besser, Clachter will get all it. Christ will don't then a helig is an a weather, Nick Bert one. Sean, a brain, no conchoid of the head of a device and a fact dimly in Agostad. Nick Bert one, a meal on the worship conchoid of ten marchi for not another.
And Rother Son of Zoon.
Rother Son of a Sunter. Niek, ach, gan da wat weer Aragonti, derne heren tempel gereden, baardes nei wogen, toeis, tiedes lintes rode, maar zijn huisjes meek naar reetie die schlechte ach, en maden, ze de gemerkt geen schuld, daar meek ka eenige kollegele, ergens kan schuldigt, traan hoon, het rechtachter walero, daar weer de neko, weer een vertige kan schuldigt. Ik zeg dat je er een geheer bent, ik was naar haar geverrelijst. Daar is zo'n geheer, ze was een geheer. Ik weer piept in elkaar gewogen en de tranen en trees en gaan zo recht geleden.
Ik zie je gaan eten.
Weer zo'n ja, ze mag nu morgen geen weet.
Wil we sloe maar binnen aan een oorzaan?
Dat is nu nog eens toch al breedjes keer geleden.
Agus fi Skyland?
Nw er ychwa sy'n dod, da fi sheikh Livon di ag los ga posh di yogan.
Both the delights and the difficulties of life on the Great Blasket have been well chronicled. The final departure has been put down to the failure of the fishing and a declining population which was steadily growing more elderly. In the years since the island was evacuated, however, there's been a tendency to look back with nostalgia or even sentimentality to a romanticised version of life there, particularly in song.
Oh, the beaving vesti gaunis and sauro ferraim on the field on barn at a barn adaunis on the shore yin suspay. Memo gias cochins and I voy, you know a dull tail at a voy. More in ye canini. Ach, the barlem foes and lee aun is shin gled le kele. Weer sport our on is rink a grin skelter of exers. Och, the ramai get in of set is not dolly gag shem and kyol. Weer ehe erakum maiden the grin.
The Great Blasket was by no means the most remote of Irish islands to be evacuated. In 1960, Inishark, 8 or 9 miles off the Galway coast, out beyond Inishbofin, was the next to give up. Having visited myself when it was still inhabited, I can say that it was certainly not an easy island to get into. The last stage of the journey from Cleggan between Boffin and Shark had to be made by Curragh, and the lack of harbour facilities was a major factor in sealing its fate. Richard Murphy, the poet, who has lived on a number of islands, including Inishbofin, saw the reasons for leaving it like this.
Inishark is obviously too small for anybody, so they rightly moved off. It was thickly populated in the old days because of the oppressive circumstances on the mainland.
Well, why did it eventually go down? What was the final deciding factor?
It was only 500 acres of land, which up the country of that quality land, they think was a farm for just two or three families, and the young people didn't want to stay there. They had no proper harbour, and it wasn't a modern way of life. There had been a great fishery there in the past, in the days of line fishing, but line fishing is not popular nowadays.
And all loyal people throughout the nation combined with me and Linden here. This doubtful tragedy I'm now revealing that has caused many a silent tear. That sad disaster, nothing came faster. Being in October, we long minded it. Those brave fishermen, they went out fishing on a Friday night, being the 28th. They left their homes late in the evening, about 5 o'clock, as I now relate. It's little thinking, when the stars were blinking, that they would meet with a drowning fate. When a violent hurricane bore down upon them and flared large vessels with their shrinking crowds, it was an tornado, a cyclone nature, that scattered rainbows and burst the clouds. With the lightning flashing and thunder rolling, where brave men cannot see where they can go. Some tried in vain their homes to gain, all pouring rain, it had been mixed with snow. It caused a great sensation over every station where brave men were fighting through splash and spray. That left men sleeping and many weeping from Rusijisk into Lachlan Bay.
Many families on both Inishark and Inishbofin lost relatives and friends in what was called the Cleggan disaster of 1927. But there were other tragedies involving perhaps a single family, and in one of these, Tom Lacey, known as the King of Inishark, lost two sons.
Easter Sunday morning, the rest of my boys was over in England. That one was there for myself and the Roman, and those two boys, two fine men indeed. No harm to say it. All right. They got up in the morning, Easter Sunday morning. I wasn't up, and they had a joke about the sun being dancing for them in the morning, as we used to one time. They had a good breakfast. They went down to the shore and got another man and got a canoe and crossed over, and it was choppy to go the harbour of the mouth. They get wet. So this strand over here was enticing. It was very, very calm the north side. Very, very calm. Sea was very calm. They landed there, lift up their canoe. They ran it. And I'm told they overtook mass. They went into that unfortunate place over there. I believe they stayed too long in it. The tide got too high. And when they come back, they were determined to come home by all means. They had nobody here but their disabled father and their old mother, and their little partner Paul at the time to look after this young man. Them three men come back and they took their canoe. They lift her down. We must admit they had a few drinks on them. Not too much, I was told. But they were determined to come home by all means. They lift her down. And they didn't know anything about the place. The sea come. Perhaps they mightn't be bored at all. The sea come on the Curragh and on themselves and know more about them.
Tom Lacey, in whose house we stayed just before the last six families left Inishark in October 1960, had good reason to feel a grudge against the cruel sea, and he had then no regrets about leaving the island.
There was no man on this island. Build their home with their own hands, but myself. I built it and I furnished it with my own hands. And reared 7 of my family in it. And lost 2 of them.
Mm-hmm.
I have 2 boys in home here. Mm-hmm. And I have a girl in England and 2 boys more there. They're all married now.
Mm-hmm.
But still, I won't be sorry in a way. My day's coming. And as I said before, I'll get the rest of the church, please God. And that'll be a great thing, won't it?
Yet when the day came for Tom Lacey to leave his home in Inishark, he refused to go with the rest and actually spent a whole night on his own out in the Atlantic before he was finally persuaded to join his family and fellow islanders on the mainland near Cleggan. He was an island man who really deserved to have ballads made about him.
The day we spent in merriment, it was growing dark. We gave 3 cheers for Ireland and lovely Inishark. 'Twas there we met Tom Lacey, that chieftain bold and true, who fought against victorious troops and the Tans he did subdue. He led his men both fierce and grim and conquered many a foe, until he came to Tara's Hill, which proved his overthrow. 'Twas there he was surrounded by the Land Commission men. "Surrender now, my boys," they said, "or we will shoot to kill, and have you all transported to the rocks of Fountain Hill. Tis long we will remember that cold October day. They left him there in deep despair without either turf or hay. God bless brave Thomas Lacey, he was a hero evermore. And now he's like Napoleon on St. Helena's shore. Now to conclude and finish, I hope I've said no wrong. And the first time I will visit you, I'll sing for you this song. So Tom, my dear, be of good cheer and rise up with the lark. And bless the day you sailed away from lovely Inishark.
The saga of Tom Lacey did not end with his leaving Inishark. It's one of the ironies of the island story that those who looked forward so eagerly to life on the mainland as the solution to all their problems were very often disillusioned when their ambition was realised. Just 10 years ago, we revisited Tom Lacey and the Inishark people where they had settled around Fountain Hill, and we asked Tom if he really blessed the day he sailed away from lovely Inishark.
We had good farms on the island. Very good farms. Was able to hold plenty of cattle there. And I was transferred into a very poor place. Now, it's right, I think. I'll tell the truth. Miserable place, indeed. Couldn't keep there only about a cover a cap.
And that's you had, all. Plenty of cattle in the other place.
Plenty of cattle on the other place, all I wanted to. Plenty of good land. So here the land is poor and bad and miserable. And a man that immigrated from Inishark out to here, to live here, he cannot live. He cannot live on the land anyway.
Mm. A lot of them seem to have gone away. The young people seem to have immigrated.
Young people is immigrated mostly all together. Anyone that's able to go is gone. So that, as I say, they have to stay, and a poor, miserable living they'll have here unless they go fishing. And the fishing has turned out bad now too, at the present time. Very bad, indeed. The weather is the cause of it altogether, I believe. Must be the weather. So anyway, we are going on fairly well here. In the first place, anyway, we have an opportunity that we hadn't in Inishark. I'll have to say that much. We can get a medical aid if we wanted it. We can get a clergyman if we wanted him. And we can get our mail regular. Well, that's one opportunity now, anyway. I miss the land I miss the land and the way of living we had. It was a good way of living.
You were all together there and all
was
close
all
to one another.
All together there. Living happy. Very, very happy. Way happier than the mainland.
After Inishark, the next major island to be abandoned was Gola, a couple of miles out from Bonbeg and the Donegal Gaeltacht. Only a few families were left on it when we visited it in 1967. The land seemed good, the houses were in excellent condition, and some of the islanders were quite prepared to stay. But as Sean McGinlich, author of a couple of books on the island, told us recently, the young people had the last word. What happened to Gola in 1967 and to Inishark in 1960 is now being repeated in the case of two other western islands, Inishturk South and Inishturbit off the coast of Connemara. For some years now, only two families have lived on Inishturk, one of these reasonably happy to remain, the other not having up to now much alternative. When we visited the island about this time 5 years ago, there were around 20 people living on it, eight of them being schoolchildren, and seven of the eight belonging to one family, the Burkes. Joe and Mrs. Burke told us why they had not joined most of the other families who had moved to the mainland.
Well, I can't afford to pay for a house to get out of it, you know. We'll have to wait through the Land Commission, do something for us to take us out of it.
Well, is that the only reason?
Oh, that's the only reason I'd want to stay in it. I don't mind leaving it at all.
And do you feel the same, Joe? Would you like to stay or...?
I'd like to go, but I'd like land, you know. I've a big family to rear, and I'd like a lot of milk I'd want to buy, and I want spuds, and I want...
And you haven't got any land at all, or you wouldn't have any land on the mainland?
Well, I suppose I wouldn't get any money a site or a house, and that would be no good to me.
So you intend to stay?
That's about why I have to stay, anyways, I suppose.
The Burke family have now finally got a fine new Land Commission house with all modern facilities near Clifton, and will be leaving Inishturk within the next week or so. The only other family, the Hannans, were, and are, determined to stay on the island. Mrs. Bridget Hannan told us why.
Because I like the island, and I'd like to live on the island.
And is there a good life to be had on the island these days?
Yes, there is a good life on the island. If you are fit to work on the island, and fit to fish, and fit to do everything, there's a good life.
And is there a life for young people on it?
Well, it's kind of hard on young people, you know. There isn't much... like, start a life for them, like, in the line of going in and going out, like. Young people is different to old people. They couldn't go to a dance or they couldn't much go in any place, especially in winter time.
But now that most of the families have, in fact, left and more leaving, you know, how is it going to work out after that for the young people who are left?
Well, I don't know. that's up to themselves. Life is as you make it.
But island life can very often be at the mercy of the elements, and as we've heard already, a drowning or similar tragedy can be the catalyst determining whether islanders go or stay. Both Turk and Turbot were deeply affected by the tragedy of 4 years ago when three young men returning to Turbot from Clifton after watching Galway play on television were drowned.
Good Christians, all on you I call, come join with me and pray for the souls of those three Turbot men that were drowned on Airford Bay. When they left their boats at Airford, the sun was shining bright. But when they returned later, it was the dark of night. Though dark with gloom, they sailed for home without either dread nor fear. And little Annie of them thought the death it was so near. When suddenly from the southeast a hurricane it blew, and the rain it fell in torrents, what could those poor men do? But look to the Almighty God and what they were going through. It was just two weeks after, 'twould grieve your heart full sore, to see the father of three orphans washed up on the seashore, with jet black hair like one in prayer, he lay upon the sand, far from his home and family upon the Airford strand.
After the drowning tragedy of 1974, few of the 16 or 17 families then living on Inish Turbot really wished to remain. On the mainland, they shared the same landing facilities, that is, the stony exposed strand at Airfort, with the people of Inish Turk. But they suffered a further disability, a lack of spring water.
We didn't have any water before the well was drilled. What we used to have to use was water from the bogs, which would be kind of brown in colour and wouldn't taste very good. We used to have to use it for drinking and washing and everything. But the county council, then about 15 years or so ago, they drilled a well in a sandy place, and there was a rock about, the well is about 15 feet deep, and there's about that much sand over it, but they struck water there anyway, and it's a spring well. It lasts most of the year, except maybe for a couple of weeks in midsummer, or it dries.
Willie Clancy talking to us on Inish Turbot 4 years ago. Since then, Willie has got a house with central heating on a half acre of land not far from Clifton, the same type of house that other islanders are now getting on the mainland.
My sister is up in Tiverloch, that's a Streamstown, and there's one, two, three, four. There are four other houses, members of the same family, cousins and so on, and brothers. Up in the two near her. So that's five houses altogether in Streamstown. And there's one in Dunin, that's about a mile south of Clifton, over the hill. And there are three or four back in Fahey, that's near the sea, near Ardamore, like, you know, Fahey or Bay Lake, you know. And then there are about three out in Kill, Kingstown. And I think that's about all of them that's there now, except for the house that I got built in West Gowl on. But I'm living it a year and a half now, and I only got 6,000 of a grant to see. They're giving the other ones paying for everything, you know, electricity and everything.
And but they're very nice houses too.
They are, but at that time, you see, that I took it, I was satisfied to take what I was getting, because I wanted to get out of the island, because I used to get very depressed in there, you see, in the bad weather, and the winter time especially.
When we met Willie Clancy on that occasion, he had just come out from Inishturbit after a week in which no Curragh could land at Erford Strand. We asked him if that was a big factor in influencing people to leave the island.
That's right, that's most of the reason why they're leaving. And I suppose too, on account of the people getting drowned 2 or 3 years ago, that kind of set them thinking more, you know. And another difficulty, is a big difficulty, is they never get a mass very often, except maybe about a couple of times in the year to Kingstown, 3 miles away. So then when they're out here, they'll be able to come to Clifton to mass every Sunday. And another thing is having to come out every Saturday for groceries and supplies and get a taxi, bring them back to the beach, the landing point, then put them into the Curragh and row 3/4 of a mile, whether it's rough or calm, then put them out on the quay again and carry them on your back down to the house. That applies to bottled gas as well as everything else.
Mrs. Ellen Wallace, who left Inishturbit a couple of months ago, is delighted to be getting one of the new houses at Tevalocha. She has no romantic illusions about life on the island, or about the new life either.
Well, there was a lot of hardship in it, of course, and hard work. We had no turf there and no spring water. That was mostly the way we left. Otherwise, it was easy enough to live in it. But the crossing in and out was rough in winter time and spring time. The summer is nice, very nice, the summer is in it.
So you don't think you'll miss very much then by leaving the island?
No, I won't miss very much. The only thing I miss is that I don't see any way of making a living out here, because we have got no land, only just an acre on the site where the house is built, and that's all. We can't keep a cow, anything like that. That's going to be very hard. And they're away from the fishing. They won't be able to do any fishing from here, as far as I know, the youngsters.
Michael Walsh, boat builder and ballad maker, formerly of Inishturk and now living at Fountain Hill, feels that the young people may yet live to regret leaving the islands.
Young people rather have be on the mainland, you know, but that's where they're foolish. They're able to handle themselves in and out in Curragh, their boats. And while they're able for that, they make great living in the islands, beside being out on the mainland. And then, you know, they don't spend as much when they're on the islands either. They'll only make a day out in every month, maybe, or if there was fishing time or anything, they mightn't come out for 2 months or 3 months, you know.
And there are no pubs on the islands.
That's what I mean. There's no, you don't spend as much money in it as they spend out here.
But that's probably one reason why they want to leave them, is it?
Well,
they think the gay life is on the mainland.
That's a bit of foolishness of them too. But that's in the line of them coming out and living out on the mainland now. There's a good few in it that are getting a bit old, you know. And when people get over 70 at all, they're too old, they're not fit to go in or going out, and if they haven't sons of their own, then work the boat for them and help them into the Curragh, they'd be in a bad way, you know, they couldn't come out.
Richard Murphy also sees two sides to the evacuation of the islands.
Well, if you call it an evacuation, it sounds sad, but I think probably to the people who are leaving the island, it's a new future that they're interested in and excited about. They have new houses on the mainland. They won't have to cross the dangerous sound in the dark on the winter nights to get home if they go visiting. But it does mean the end of a very long-lived community. But I wonder why they were there in the first place. Wasn't it possibly because of the famine and the evictions further up the country? And isn't this kind of the last return to the land of people who got pushed out to the poorer parts of Connemara?
With two more islands now on the point of being deserted, what does the future hold in store for those still inhabited? Next week, we look at Torry off Donegal, which may be next on the list for clearance. Apart from Torry, however, the larger islands look like holding out. Cape Clear off Cork, the Aran Group and Inishbofin off Galway, Clare Island off Mayo, Rathlin off Antrim, and Aranmore off Donegal. Aranmore may be typical of the larger and more viable communities, and it looks as if it will last for a long time yet. Padraig O'Cnavshe.
My own opinion is that the people it'll last for at least 3 more generations. Now, a generation in my estimation would be about 30 years, so they would last for 100 years. And we don't know what will happen then, but at least that length of time. I can't see it being abandoned until the fuel supplies are exhausted, and that, they should last out for 60 to 100 years.
And of course, it's also one of the few islands that has cars on it.
Yeah, there must be upwards to 50 or 60 cars on the island. Well, the distances on the island are probably bigger than most islands. There are more islands 4.5 miles long by 3 miles wide. And for that reason, they have more reason to use cars than anywhere else. You wouldn't have the same opportunity or the same necessity for using cars, we'll say, on a small island like Innisfree or Torrey Island. And then there are three harbours on the island, and it's very important to have a car or a lorry or some kind of vehicle that'll bring your fishing gear to from your place of residence to where you work. That, in other words, to the pier or pierhead.
And as a final word on the future of the islands, large and small, we have the poet's view from Richard Murphy.
The larger islands, like Inishbofin, I hope will never, never be evacuated. I think that would be terrible. But it is difficult for people to live on a very small island. It becomes lonely. And I remember a few years ago, just before people moved from Inishturk, when I went out there, and I noticed that quite a number of them had binoculars and were looking at what was going on the mainland, because there wasn't enough happening on the land, or they could also see who was coming back to the island from the mainland. I think what may happen on the islands, as happening in Shark, is that the smaller islands will probably be taken over gradually by people who want to get away to that kind of isolation, who want to be on their own for their holidays, and there are some lovely beaches on the island, and want absolute privacy. There are people who love living on islands, and it'd be ideal for them. They're not necessarily the people who were born on them. I certainly have loved islands, always.
But I suppose you need some contact with human beings as well.
Certainly. I don't want to live on an island by myself. I don't want to live on an island that the rest of the people are leaving. I'd leave with them if I were an islander. And it's very, very sad, say, to go to an island and see the empty houses. It's very, very sad indeed. It's a kind of tradition, almost a traditional sadness. It's the old sadness of ruins, which was commonplace in the west of Ireland. I think the beauty of Connemara is that kind of sad beauty of landscape, which people have abandoned, as it were, or which is almost uninhabited, or just about to be left by the people who are living in it. This is changing, I think, on the mainland. People are staying much more. The younger generation who are growing up have a prospect of living at home, if they wish to, and travelling simply for pleasure, excitement, new outlook, new ideas, new better jobs. But they can live at home now, which is marvellous.